Hey there, folks. It's Brock from the Sprocket Podcast, and this is a little bit of an unusual episode because I am talking to you through my iPhone. And we tried to do this with Aaron and earlier in the day. Something went wrong, so I'm hoping nothing goes wrong this time. I just wanted to get something to those of you who are listening and love the show. No, of course, this is not a full show. However, this is something that might be of interest to some of you, especially if you love transit. So in lieu of what we had planned to do, we are going to have our planned guest, Megan Emerson, back sometime later on, probably next month. And she's going to talk to us about being working on a barge that goes up and down the Columbia River. Because I'm a big fan of things that go places, and I think it's important to know where your stuff comes from, how it gets there. And I'm also a huge fan of Richard Scarry, the guy who wrote the book about, was it Busy Town, with all the animals driving things and whatnot. So anyways, that's a thing that's going to happen here in just a minute or two. Wanted to thank you all for your patience, and also wanted to preface this with this is about the new Type 5 TriMet rail cars that have been ordered. They came from Siemens, the technology company. I mean, they build rail cars and things. Anyways, this is some of the guys from Siemens that came in to demo the brand new car. They've got I want to say at least one of the prototype vehicles. There are going to be more of them, and they'll be here in town when the new Orange Line to Milwaukee opens up. And that's Milwaukee, Oregon, not the place where Pabst Blue Ribbon is from. So this is very exciting. I was excited to get to see something for the first time that not a lot of people did. So anyways, if you're at all curious about transit, you're probably going to enjoy some of this too. The audio quality is not great, because I did not plan on recording some stuff when I went out there. I was probably just going to take some pictures, but the way the things worked out, we had some time. I had some people to talk to, and I thought, it'd be interesting. So I'll try and interject a couple of things that people might be interested in knowing as we go through. Basically, there was three things that I looked at. There was kind of a survey of the new design of the Type 5 car. Talked with one of the guys on the design team about riding bikes, and then we'll wrap up with me in the cab talking about some of the things specific to the operation of the train. So anyways, thank you so much for your patience. Sorry we don't have a full show for you this week, but we have technology at our backs for the next time we get around, I think. Hopefully by then we'll have everything put together. The wind will not have been blowing hard, and we will not have a power outage. All right, we're going to have probably some updates about whatever we're going to talk about today in our next show. So, yeah, of course, Aaron had some fun things that happened over the weekend. I went down to Eugene with Adele on the Bolt bus and explored a wonderfully bikeable community. So we will have updates about those things later on. Thanks again, and here's me getting onto the Type 5 and talking with Diane Goodwin from TriMet and with Pete and Ron from Siemens.
So is it okay if I walk the length and check it out?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
It's all over.
Excellent.
Interchangeable, yes.
We're talking to you guys there, and then
Oh.
What do you think, Gary?
Good.
I do like the seating so much better.
Yeah, not boring.
I love the...
Oh, right. They went back to the old design, right? Because
yes,
it used to be wedging people face-to-face,
yes.
And now it's the
long...
It was
not well-received by riders, so...
Yeah, yeah.
It was just too, too hard for people to fit in.
Well, I'm glad to
see
it.
Someone told me,
yeah.
This forces me to talk to strangers. Yes, it does.
And is this more seating than you would have had on the old Type 1, Type 2?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yes, but not more than the 4, because with the pods.
Because of the arrangement, yeah.
But because of the arrangement, you actually have more usable ones, because people don't want to sit across from each other, so
right.
You only end up using half of those seats.
There was some crazy spots.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So there were 16 seats in Type.
There are 16 seats in Type 4.
And here's 14.
These are 14.
Okay.
But there are 10 of these in the Type 3s.
Right.
And 2s.
Right. Yeah.
So
because of the smaller
perception, really. I mean,
right. But perception counts, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
For people, at least my size, and you guys are approaching my size, it's like the knee space, I remember, in the Type 4.
Yeah.
There's a chance.
And you'll really... you'll really notice a difference in here. The space here versus the Type 4s.
Okay. Oh, right, because now there's actually room here.
Yeah. Extra 90 millimeters to be exact.
Okay, yes. 90 millimeters more.
Millimeters.
Whereas before, that was another place where my knees would crunch.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't impossible, but...
Would you mind if...
May I?
You're kind of on the higher end of the
of
percentile.
Course.
Would you mind do a little mercury?
So your knee would be jammed against her before. And
right.
A little bit of space. I mean, I see your foot is a little bit cocked, but...
Right.
You have a little room here to move it forward.
So we've got the barrier here, which is... That's the extra 90.
Yeah, and then like in your face
the actual frame of the car here. Right. I can still fit my knee behind, which is great.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
I'm cool with that.
And then the seat probably could be adjusted just a little bit back, but we leave a little bit of room for flexure. And
right.
Pardon me, I have to go.
Oh, excuse me.
How important is the seat flexure? Like, I mean, I suppose it depends on the size of the person sitting in the seat, but is it...
Well, it's an integral part of the testing, really. We do dynamic testing, static testing to all these seats.
Fatigue testing.
Right. So they have to meet certain requirements, load requirements, and they're allowed to deflect so much, so they do that.
There we go.
But, I mean, do you have to have a seat that has that flexure? No. But when you sit in it, it's a more comfortable experience.
Right.
And if you think about it, energy absorption and so forth,
right.
You know, if you can dissipate energy while, you know, you're in a hard stop or you know, heaven forbid a crash.
Right.
It's there. So.
And not, I guess it's like the seat material is metal, and so it's not going up against, is it fiberglass or plastic enclosure there?
This is
there's enough space for it not to crash into the fiberglass then.
Right. Yeah. So we can, you know, keep pinch points down to a minimum.
And
someone just happens to be here and it's
our stuff.
Definitely.
Think about all that stuff. You know, I mean,
right.
You don't, I guess the common Joe doesn't think that we think about that stuff, but we have to, you know.
Like, right.
You know, this. You know, there's a requirement for how much gap you're allowed, you know, minimum
between
gap.
The handrail and the barrier here.
Yeah, so we have to accommodate for that.
There we go.
The size of the diameter of the pipe as well.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
I'm recording now, actually. Is it okay
if I didn't know that. Okay.
could I share some information with folks about the Type 5?
Sure.
Maybe at a basic rundown. First of all, can I take your name?
Yes, my name is Peter Clark.
Peter Clark.
Mm-hmm.
From Siemens?
Siemens, yes.
Siemens, excuse me.
It's okay, it looks like Siemens.
Right. it was always a matter of debate among me and my friends when I was younger. So you guys design and build rail cars. Where are you from? Are you in the U.S.?
Yes, yeah,
okay.
We're in Sacramento.
You're in Sacramento, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume your cars are in various places all over, and the doors work too.
Yes. And it'll probably
in various places all over the U.S. Portland is one. What are the other markets?
Other markets. Well, we have light rail vehicles all over the U.S. and Puerto Rico, and so Los Angeles, Denver, Salt Lake, Norfolk, Charlotte. Twin Cities.
Yeah.
I mean,
all over.
Yeah, I'm Houston, I'm not naming them all, but
right.
San Diego, of course.
I wouldn't expect you to have the exhaust.
So, we also do heavy rail vehicles, locos and coaches and things like that. I'm not personally involved in those. I'm the light rail guy.
You're the light rail. So the Type 1 was mid-80s, is that right?
I think that's right. That
was
another manufacturer.
That Siemens made?
No, that was Bombardier. I think that was Bombardier. Different manufacturer. So the Type 2s, those came in the mid-90s.
Those were yours?
Those were ours.
Okay.
And we've built all of TriMet's fleet since then.
Gotcha.
Those have all gone to open bid, and we've won every bid since then.
Yeah.
And very happy to do so, and very happy to provide these latest and greatest vehicles to them and augment their fleet.
One of the nicest things about a new vehicle is that it has that new vehicle smell.
we make that scent.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm always wanting
to get that as an air freshener. Well, there's something about it's almost the vinyl smell. Like the seats, I'm sure, have something to do with that. And
the materials, you know, and so forth, and just the newness of the materials, you know.
It hasn't
really absorbed any of the doors are closed. The environment.
Yeah. So what aspect of the cars are you involved with? Are you the PR guy or are you
a
designer?
No, I'm the head engineer
for
the whole vehicle, the whole project, actually all the light rail projects at Siemens.
Okay.
But I have a personal connection to this one. This is kind of a...
It's your baby?
Yeah, kind of a near and dear place to my heart. This is the configuration I've always wanted to bring this vehicle platform to have.
Okay.
So
like
this enhanced
wiping
ADA
out
area, the C car, just
the, you know, we had you test earlier, this extra space
right.
and the articulation seating. You're a tall guy. You fit pretty well. And I'm happy. I'm real happy.
I'm glad. What's one of your favorite things about designing cars?
You know, I think it's the... It's not... I think just being involved in the creation, but also... Although I have to painfully wait for the actual vehicle to be built, just that tactile feedback and being able to on the shop floor and get my hands dirty and you know, working out solutions and just all of that just rolled into one big smile. I think
yeah. Yeah.
it results in one big smile. I think that's the that's what keeps me going.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of what else would be of interest.
The parlor cab is
yeah.
kind of unique. We call it the parlor cab or non-cab end, as it is technically called.
Right. That's the end of the train where there's no driver. It's
right,
it's got a window and you can look around. And
right. Sorry to interrupt. But the TriMet operates the vehicles in two-car consists or two-car trains. So the thought was there that it would be more efficient and to optimize the seating and standee area to not have this cab that would normally just kind of be wasted.
Right.
So we converted it to a seating section like
yeah.
we did on Type 4. There are six seats there because you may have noticed the front end is a little bit different instead of the eight seats that are in Type 4 because it's a longer nose.
Okay.
However, I believe it's a little more refined.
Yeah.
We had, I think, a nice design on Type 4, but Type 5 because of the lessons learned and just had some experience doing that. It had to be redesigned because of the different number of seats, but all the elements are still there.
Yeah.
You compare the two and you'll see the electrical racks are still under there, the access panels and just the layout in general is very similar
right.
to Type 4. And I think that's a popular spot for people to ride in. I think from what I've noticed riding the line, people tend to just kind of migrate there into the C car. And I think that will hold true in this vehicle as well.
Yeah. So like if you were at Disney World riding the monorail, you want to be in the front because you can pretend you're driving. This is
yeah,
not in the
yeah.
front, but it's similar.
It's not. No, there's just something about that glass kind of greenhouse, I think, feel and
yeah.
kind of like an open patio or something. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I've migrated there myself. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
It's a bit unusual. I mean, you see it in Europe a lot on trams, but not in the U.S. Right?
Yeah.
I think this is very unusual, and we're proud to develop that.
How much do you know about the politics of the parlor area in the cars? Because I assume like parlor has a kind of a like conversational aspect. Like,
right.
Does it tend to be a place where people congregate and chat and have conversations with each other?
You know, I can only assume that.
Hard to say.
I don't know anything about the the local politics
right.
or the like dislike kind of thing
yeah.
Online or whatever about it, but. I think that's one of the reasons that people migrate there. Not only the environment, the open light, sun, all that stuff, but just it's kind of like a couch,
yeah.
you know, or a family room. It
right.
kind of feels cozy,
yeah.
you know. And I think there's a certain invitation there because of that
yeah.
arrangement.
Is there anything new with bike access?
New with bike access? Yeah, it's very similar to the Type 4s. However, we have allocated more space, and like I said, we're really mimicking the Type 2s and 3s here. We have the, as TriMet dictates, where the bikes and the strollers and wheelchairs should enter.
Right.
They like to keep those a bit segregated. And so we have a nice glass panel here. You know, physically we keep like a bike, from
right.
or whatever. But
these will probably get dirty because that's where the front wheel is going to rest in the rain.
Right, but they do have a vandal shield on them and they're easy to
okay.
clean and
there
so
you go.
Forth. So they come in the front door and they just tip the bike up vertically and hook it on the hook. And there's a cradle here for the back wheel.
The cradle is a great invention. That's something I have a similar system to this in my garage, mm-hmm. and I would love to
yeah.
to stick a cradle for the back wheel so
yeah.
that we don't fishtail about.
Yeah.
But that keeps it from swinging when the car is going
right.
laterally,
just
right?
Keeps it, yeah, it keeps it kind of in line, and also the geometry is such that the hook is pivoting the bike in such a way that the CG is kind of pushing the back wheel against
the center of gravity.
Yeah, against the seat.
There we go. Yeah.
So it just kind of works real nicely.
Science class does good things for you.
Yeah, and also it's
comfortable consistent with other vehicles that TriMet owns. So the public is familiar with the interface.
They're right? going to the same so, place that they always
right,
used to go to
right.
put their bike on.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then I think that's an important aspect as well, is to try and keep things consistent.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's not something they enjoy, then we won't want
right.
to be consistent. But yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Anything new for ADA? You mentioned there's more room in the
right.
pathways.
So we, relative
areas.
To the Type 4s, we stretch this area between the doors over a half a meter.
Okay.
And
it does look bigger now that you mentioned it, but I wouldn't have noticed it unless you said something.
Type 4s only have these two transverse seats, the two-pass transverse seats. So the stretch allowed us not only to have bigger windows and so forth, but also to add this two-pass longitudinal flip-down seat, which allows another dedicated ADA parking area or
okay.
stroller or whatever,
right.
As well as the existing ADA parking area on the other side. But also, if you think about someone who's a companion to one who's bound to a wheelchair,
right? Say one of you is in a wheelchair, one of you is not.
Right next to that wheelchair-bound person, and so we call it companion seating.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was something that was very important to TriMet.
Right.
And we really made every effort to bring that back. And we had a little bit of length left over in the vehicle because there's a maximum length we're afforded.
I was going to ask about that, yeah. So with all this new space, is the vehicle longer than the old ones?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not. That's our bookend, and we were allowed to play with that.
Okay.
So we had a little bit of length left over, and that is where that extra length we put into the articulation seating right at the entrance of the new C-car where you sat down and
there
immediately noticed there was a lot more space.
Wait, so what went away? What was huge that's now smaller?
Well, the cabs are actually shorter
okay.
by almost a half a meter, but
okay.
they are optimized, and the space is optimized.
Uh-huh.
If you were to get into a P4, a Type 4 cab, and then get into a Type 5 cab, the space really rivals that in the P5. It
right.
rivals that of the P4.
It's not an appreciable loss.
No, actually it's not. That swoopy nose of the Type 4.
Yeah.
Very attractive, I think. And We were able to optimize. We have a brand new operator's desk that really molds into the front end of the vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and that afforded more space. And all the amenities are in there. And
so in a lot of ways, this is more like the Type 3 than the Type 4.
Well, I think certain sections, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of design cues are taken from that, and I think that's really taken directly from the feedback that we received from TriMet. The C car, obviously, would if you were to compare the two, very similar. More seats than the Type 2s and 3s, but the longitudinal seating there with the feet in the aisle like that.
Where people are facing,
right.
kind of riding from left to right or right to left.
Right.
Sitting sideways.
And that open wheelchair, accommodation.
Okay, yeah.
And then, and of course, this area we're standing in right here, the in between the doors, as I mentioned, is mimicking the Type 1s, Type 2s and 3s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and those, in that context, absolutely.
So one thing I've noticed about bicycle access on the Max cars is that oftentimes the hooks fill up fast,
yeah.
and then people have to find some other place to stash their bikes.
Right.
And I'm still unclear on what the code is, and maybe it's best for that to be the case. Check with your local transit operator. But the idea that you could take a bicycle from one end of the car to the other with significantly less effort,
mm-hmm.
That seems to be a bonus.
Well, and I think there's also, there are other aspects to that too. Emergency egress. If there is, for some reason, a door that's cut out,
sure.
or whatever, then and a wheelchair-bound person does need to get to the other bridge plate, they can.
Right.
And, I think they in a pinch, they could do that in the Type 4s, but this is a lot more accessible.
Okay.
And, just passenger flow and just the look of it, I think, it looks more open.
Well, it seemed, and this is not wider than an average.
No, same dimensions, same length, same width, same floor height,
right.
same ceiling height. I mean, this is an S70, vehicle platform. I mean,
you get the sense that the
DNA's there, so,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so design counts for a lot, just because this seems so spacious.
Yeah.
I was wondering, just like, purely on a nerdy aesthetical note, like you've got the old school rail cars that were kind of designed to have a boxy front,
uh-huh.
and the Type 4 had the really futuristic bullet train swooped
right.
front look.
Uh-huh.
The Type 5 returns to a boxier look. It's got maybe more nuance and subtleties and some gentle curves. But it's not trying to look like a bullet train this time around.
I don't think we tried to make it look like a bullet train before, but it was a mask design that the front end, that is. Front
you call
end
it mask. The mask?
It's a mask. It's
okay.
A fiberglass component
yeah.
that is installed. And we had that design from another contract, and that vehicle length fit TriMet's operational constraints. So in this one, for Type 5, we had since redesigned the front end for another contract, and... So we decided to use this new front end on Type 5, tweak it, of course, for TriMet, to accommodate the different A and B ends, that is the cab and non-cab ends, use that instead and really put the room back into the passenger area where I feel it belongs.
Okay.
Instead of in the cab where it was kind of, it's one person in there, okay, he's got to be in there, he or she's got to be in there a long time, and he's uncomfortable, but, I think that space... I think as we've proven is much better utilized in the passenger area where you have the majority of folks riding.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of the design elements in sports cars, say, or like the Dodge Charger, which started out kind of boxy, and then the Charger, I guess, didn't exist. But like sports cars, maybe the Mustang, it had a rounded phase, and now it's back to a more boxy design with gentle curves.
Right.
And it reminds me very much of the design phases that these Max cars have gone through. So
another thing on the front end too is we try to incorporate a lot of lessons learned from past projects. If you notice. The headlight clusters have changed, for example. Those are all for maintenance.
I'll have to take note of that.
Yeah, and availability of parts that make it simpler to maintain and operate and troubleshoot or whatever and replace parts if they need to be replaced.
Is that like one thing to open up to replace bulbs instead of five?
Well, the thing is that those parts are off the shelf.
Okay.
And kind of mass produced instead of these, very complex assemblies that were on past vehicles.
Okay. So you can go to your local auto parts store and pick up whatever you need.
Not necessarily, but they're off the shelf in the transit industry.
Gotcha.
Things like that. Just cleaning things up. The coupler shroud or the front end shroud in the lower section is a refined version of what we had on the Type 4s. Obviously, we had to redesign that as well because the front end geometry, as you noticed, changed.
Yeah.
It's not as swoopy or kind of nosy as the Type 4s, but those design elements, again, working in lessons learned and constantly improving is part of our design approach. All these refinements come into the vehicle and create a product like this, which I'm very happy with.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable. The feng shui is good. Strike the pose.
We should start yogi flying.
Yeah.
Well, you go ahead.
Could I put you on the record for comments or anything as well? Okay, you want to introduce yourself for the tape?
Yeah, sure. I'm Ron.
The non-existent metaphoric tape.
Yeah. I'm Ron Van Hoogsloot. I'm the project manager for the Type 5 vehicles from Siemens.
Okay. What goes into the management aspect?
Well, obviously, schedule is always important to the client, but even more important than that is getting through all of the stuff that isn't necessarily written originally in the schedule or in the contract. There's a lot of things that we heard from the client about what the passengers wanted. There were a lot of things that we heard about that the operators wanted and a lot of things that the maintainers wanted. With all of those things, we worked together with finding what we call the value engineering approach, where we would lay them all out and say, what would they mean? What would they do to the schedule? What can we do? What does it change? How do they fit together? Pick those with the client, partner with them to say, these are the things that we need to do. And it was clear that there were things like the C card that were just so important to the usability of this vehicle from a passenger perspective, from ADA, from seating and comfort and everything. There were things that we had to do and wanted to do. So those became the priorities. And then we looked for additional safety things like more cameras for additional security.
Right. There are more cameras on here now than there were before.
Probably about twice as many cameras on this, and they're all Ethernet connected, and all of those go into the into the cab and can be viewed, and then they recorded higher definition and all of that kind of stuff, which increases the safety and the ability to figure out what's happened.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, it's really making sure that all the documentation, all the safety documentation, the design work is done. Get that all in line, work together with my colleague Pete to get the design agreed, get the first article inspections done, and keep your eye on the prize of getting this car here early.
Right.
Which we managed to do in spite of a lot of changes we did to what was the original contract design. We still came in more than a month early, and so we're pretty proud of this car. We're pretty excited to see it running, and we think that Portland is going to attract a lot of attention, and a lot of people from Seattle's and other places are going to come to have a look at this and say, yeah, I think that's what we want.
Right.
So.
Yeah. What's the most rewarding aspect of being a manager on a project like this?
Well, that I can come and say I had a part to deal with something like this, not just pointing at a shelf of binders or something and say all that paperwork was mine. No, this is real. This
we were talking about that this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is really thinking, okay, we've created something that can help people get around a city, get there in comfort, get there in safety, and so to actually take a picture of it and put it on the desktop of your computer or something.
That's
right. Yeah.
Right.
That's mine.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's it.
Do you have a favorite aspect of this particular car?
Oh, it's got to be the C car. Yeah. I mean, Pete and I, we must have talked 10 years ago about, geez, we want that C car.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is an expensive design because it's a complete and total redesign. The roof, the way the equipment sits on the roof, the understructure of the bogey, the entire seating arrangement, it's a big, big job.
Yeah.
To do that, and we of course didn't decide to do it until we were halfway through the design cycle, so that could have really put us in trouble with the end schedule, because when you say, okay, well, hang on, I know we're just about to go into our final design reviews, but let's change it all, that really could, if we didn't have the cooperation of TriMet and we didn't have that partnership, it could have gone really, really horribly wrong.
Sure, yeah.
That much more special, actually.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've all seen movies that have been rewritten midway through production, and they're terrible movies. So, so this is a good...
Let's hope this one gets good reviews.
Indeed.
So.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your time. After I concluded my initial recording, I learned that Ron is actually a big fan of bicycling, and so we talked a little bit about that. Yeah, tell me about the bicycling.
Well, I am an avid cyclist with my wife. We've cycled all over this country, and we've managed to do, our vacations inevitably involve cycling.
Yeah.
Our last one was from Scotland down to London, and before that it was from Vienna to Prague.
Yeah.
And we've cycled in 3 days around the island of Puerto Rico.
Oh, really?
350 miles in three days, and so that's where we live.
And that's you can get there, and it's still a U.S. possession, right?
So it is.
That means it's easy to get to, but you get the kind of the still exotic locale.
I mean, absolutely fantastic weather, and it was a big event. It was like 600 people in three pelotons, so it was kind of like doing the Tour de France. You had the police out in front of you, so it was wonderful, and. It's expensive to get your bikes around the country.
Right,
We need to talk to the airlines about that. But my latest acquisition is a little Dayhan foldable 21-speed.
Folding bikes are fantastic.
That fits inside a suitcase, so I pack everything that I own in my carry-on. My bike actually is what gets checked. So
there we go. And then you've got mobility when you get to wherever you're going. Do you have it with you on this trip?
Not on this trip. Okay. We're only here for a couple of hours this time, but next time.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Well, we wish you the best. Portland has some decent bicycling, as I'm sure you probably know. So.
Yeah.
I hope you get a chance to check it out sometime.
Yeah, we'll go from here down to the beach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good day's ride. Like about 60 miles, to the beach. It's not bad.
That's a perfect ride.
Yeah. What's your style as a cyclist? Are you into the racing?
No,
gear,
This is distance. So my favorite distance is around about 70 miles, 75 miles, because I get to stop and get to take pictures. But my wife and I do 200 mile in a day events.
Yeah.
So we did three of those a couple of years ago, and that was enough for a year or so. But no, no, century rides are wonderful.
Nice
days.
I've only ever done one.
And then I can eat anything and everything
you can.
That I
that's
want.
The thing. That's the thing. We talk about this often with people that like the farther you bike, the more you can eat. And there was actually a guy from NPR, and I forget his name or his show, but he put out an article basically about how. Yeah, it gives you license to eat whatever you want to, which is dangerous. The most dangerous part of that is if it's a long trip and then you end up going back home and continuing to eat. So that's what I fight against every fall.
But I mountain bike as well. So when I'm not getting out on the road, it's going to the hills. Do some single track stuff or some fun.
You're also out of Sacramento?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's good? Because I know there are hills down there.
Oh, yeah, well, we have lots of both. I mean, we're up into the foothills. But, I mean, Sacramento itself has a American River bike trail, which is 70 miles of biking along the American River from Folsom Dam, basically Folsom Lake.
Yeah, it's a
Folsom,
beautiful area.
Where Folsom Prison is all the way downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good ride, and it's, of course, just a multi-use trail.
Is it unpaved?
It's paved.
Paved?
It's
okay,
paved.
There you go.
So it's beautiful and it's nice and there's no cars and that. But we also have lots of places for mountain biking and you move into the Bay Area, San Francisco and up Mount Diablo. There's climbing if you want to do climbing like the Tour de France style climbing. You can do that. You can go over the Golden Gate Bridge and up to the Marin Headlands.
Marin Headlands are great. Is it Mount Tamalpais? Is that how you say it?
Tamalpais is another great one. The Three Bears. It's just there's all kinds of wonderful riding out there.
I would like to go back and do that again someday.
And Napa Valley is always nice, and you can stop at lots of places to sample some things.
Right. Of course you can. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Absolutely. So even though it's kind of putting itself together right now after the earthquake they had.
That was pretty recent, right?
A month ago or so.
Okay.
And so a lot of damage to a lot of the wineries and to especially some of the storage places where a lot of wine ended up on the floor.
Right. That's rough because they don't make the kegs to be the barrels to be
hopefully they had insurance at least.
I would hope so.
But yeah, the roads there are all fantastic. The weather's we have almost always have sun, maybe a little bit too much sun because we could use a little of this rain. But
do you have any other ideas about bicycling and transit and how they interleave?
I think that transit and I mean they are a perfect match in that you can way that you can feed a main system that gets you the distance, and you can feed it with bicycles or walking or whatever. You can feed it with the buses and all of that kind of stuff. And when you get that kind of feeder system and you arrange the vehicles with enough space that people, don't feel that they can't get it on there because there's no room, there's too many people. I mean, on this train, too, we have, four or five places that you can hang the bikes, and then, of course, there's wide open spaces around the door, so you can really kind of encourage the at least by the design that you don't discourage people from doing that sort of thing. And I think that's important. And we'll see more and more. I think people are conscious that this whole car thing is nuts. And if you can get a vehicle that's comfortable, fast, reliable, gets them where they want to go, jump back on your bike when you leave and you go that last little bit.
The last mile, as they call it.
And obviously a system like this with the new lines and with the kind of critical mass of lines, it starts to really be useful because you can get close to where you want to be. When you're in a starter city that's got one line, it's kind of tough.
Unless you're really on,
if you're only on that line, you really got to get beyond that before it starts to pay off.
Yeah, Tacoma has, I want to say, like 2 miles of light rail, which is great. It's a good start, but definitely not useful for getting in or out of the city.
No, it's really more a thing for tourism or for getting people around a specific corridor.
Yeah.
Sure, that's great, but it doesn't replace somebody that needs to commute.
Okay.
You can't do it yet. But you got to start somewhere, and you got to have that first. And as long as people are planning with the idea of feeding the system rather than competing with it, then you've got a recipe for something that can be good.
Right.
As soon as you start competing with it and you're putting bus rapid transit or you're putting something else running the same routes and competing, then that's a mistake.
Yeah, and that's the fascinating thing to me about the Seattle-Tacoma area is that they have amazing bus rapid transit and commuter lines and that sort of thing. The light rail, as I'm sure is the case in many places, is more expensive, so it's harder to put in, harder to implement, more expensive.
But of course, it moves an awful lot more people, too.
Right.
And it does not get stuck in traffic in the same way. So there's nothing wrong with bus rapid transit, and it can be the first step and the first phase towards... Oh, that's annoying. First step towards something, but as long as it has its own route and it makes sense and complements the rest of a integrated system, then
right.
I think it's a great thing.
Right.
So I don't think any transit solution is a bad thing and should be discarded, but it shouldn't compete with the other ones because then
right.
you're stealing.
Right. Which is the biggest problem with the private automobile is that it competes heavily with more efficient modes of getting people around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a fight, who would win, a bus or a train?
Well, what's the winning criteria on number of people you move, how far you can go, whether one runs into the other?
I just realized after I said that it could be problematic. Well, I think
I'm pretty sure this would win in the head-to-head collision.
How about for transport of bicycles?
I think the train has the access advantage. One, it has the space, it has the low floor access, it has additional hooks. I mean, it's just bigger.
Yeah.
You're not climbing up into it trying to get through really small doors.
Right.
Buses do have sometimes a rack on the front, but at most that's usually two bikes.
Two,
that can
possibly
fit there.
Three, yeah.
Two, sometimes three. I think they're not really meant to be competing with each other again.
Again, like you were saying, complimentary service.
Yeah, I mean, for a smaller line with less traffic that feeds the main one.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it's probably the right quantity.
Excellent. That's probably kind of an unfair question.
I believe that there's a bunch of different traffic in transit options that can coexist. They don't necessarily have to compete, or one can be the bridge to the next, or the first phase to get people. Because part of what you need to do is you need to, for everybody to change their mindset about this is how I get around.
Right.
And I think more and more of the millennials and the younger folks are starting to think, I don't really need a car.
It's amazing, isn't it? The trend.
I really don't. I
the
don't
trend against
understand the things are expensive and why.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather live where I want to be.
And a transit pass and a smartphone is way cheaper than a new car anyways.
Yeah, and you Uber yourself or you lift yourself into where you want to go and
right.
you never have to pay for gas or any of that stuff. And if you only use it once a week, does it pay to have a car?
Right.
I don't know. But that's a mental attitude change that has to happen. And something like a bus rapid transit or something that's effective can help to make that change. And ultimately, it benefits all of the systems.
Right, right. And then we end up with happier cities, more livable places.
We think so.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Ron.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Before I left the TriMet rail yard, I did step into the cab and I talked a little bit more with Pete about the operator controls, and I got to sit there and touch them myself, which was exciting. I don't know if I made Diane nervous or not.
It's more rounded, but there are gaps and stuff. Kind of, it was a dash that was, come from, another project or whatever, and this is just, I mean, it is really literally made for this cab, right?
Right.
So, that allowed everything to kind of just tuck in. A lot more space here, the same amount of space they have in the Type 4s here to get the window, the circuit breakers, all the controls. So
yeah, I was thinking it doesn't look small. If anything, it looks bigger than the cabs that I've observed. That's also just from a guy who's taken the train
it's
and peered in through the secret window.
It's definitely bigger than the cab than the Type 2s and 3s.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Trainer's seat.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
So you got a place for someone to sit if they're looking over your shoulder.
Right.
Observer, and then you got your coffee cup place here as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
indispensable, I'm sure.
That's right.
are these touchscreen things, or
yeah,
is it?
This is our new a monitoring and diagnosis system that this is called the train operator display, or TOD.
Okay.
And this is shows everything from speed to which doors open to which fallen is cut out, brakes are on or off, which doors are enabled, the bridge plates deployed or retracted. I mean, there are tons of screens. Talks about it shows you whether the pantograph is up or down. That's where the vehicle gets its power or energy.
Pantograph? What was that now?
Pantograph is kind of hinged looking thing that that sticks up from the roof,
connecting
that
to the power line.
Connects to the power line, catenary.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's the wire above. So
okay.
That's what collects the power and distributes it to the vehicle.
I see.
So, but then everything I talked about ergonomics before, how everything is within an arm's reach here, and
right.
That's 95th male to 5th percentile female. Right, there's a footrest on the deployable footrest on the chair, and an additional footrest here and built into the structure.
There we
give
go.
Them options for comfort. And the chair, of course, is adjustable. We have an adjustable armrest here. Looking at when you look at things like abduction of the shoulder and just fatigue in general, we really tried to address all of these items. TriMet has a special setup on their master controller handle for ergonomics, that special 12-degree angle, I think it is.
Okay.
If you look
so
at
you
your
can
wrist,
position that whichever way is most
right.
comfortable for
so
you.
If you look at your wrist straight on, it's
yeah.
angled, not straight.
Right.
A lot of studies have been done here.
Okay.
So, big CCTV displays here for the exterior cameras.
Closed circuit.
It's to look at
there we go.
Look just behind us and also forward from the mated vehicle.
Okay.
So when you have a married pair, actually split screen and look, back at the doors.
Okay.
180 feet, 180
yeah.
plus feet down.
Because there's no way you're close enough in
right.
the cockpit
yeah.
here. To
and
be able to see.
Likes their mirrors as to kind of augment their camera system that some of the operators are used to the analog approach to
having to kind of twist yourself around to see
yeah.
rock
so
and
you,
roll
did
as
you
it
get
were.
A picture on the seat?
Not yet, no.
Do you want me to take one?
May I? All right, that'd be awesome.
Totally. This is your big chance.
It really is. Well, I was thinking there's probably never again a time when I will get a chance to do this.
Yes,
so.
It's TriMet is. Because ever since the TSA came into our lives, getting people in our
things
more complicated.
Right.
Yes.
Is it okay if I? Oh yeah.
Yes.
There we go. Is it okay if I put my hand on the thing?
Sure.
Yes.
I promise I won't move
just
it.
Don't. Yeah.
Don't move anything.
Photobomb.
It's kind of dark.
Oh yeah. Is there a?
Let me take one with my.
I see if there's a. Yeah.
Mine has a. Seems to have to take a little bit. I just took a picture of Joel and it was a little brighter. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still amazed at how big. This seems just the amount of space up here.
This is much better than we just did the drive a train contest in the Type 3s.
Oh yeah.
And you'll see the video that's going to come out on Facebook soon.
Nice. Is that a rodeo sort of thing?
It was a contest we did with riders to drive a train.
Oh,
we had
right.
three that
oh, yeah.
drove the train last Saturday.
That's right. I entered
and
that.
Basically,
I didn't get
to. Sorry. but I was filming the back of their head because the training supervisor was in the only. Inches of space that could, there's no way anybody could get
right.
in there. So.
And you want that person there when
yes.
when an untrained person
well,
is
yeah, definitely,
a train.
Because the one guy was, you'll see on the video, the first guy was just really enjoying the speed. So
really excited about it. Oh, thank you.
Nice. I will send it to you.
Much appreciated. Yeah.
So the test track is right down at the end there. And
oh,
so
okay.
they get to go up to 35 miles an hour. And he was definitely doing 35. the other people weren't as interested, but he was I am getting my 35 miles an hour.
Seriously, yeah. Well, if you have the chance, why wouldn't you, right?
Right. But
unless you were afraid.
Being in all those cabs recently, I don't know if you paid attention to this, because it's kind of one of those environmental things that you may not pick up, but do you notice anything about comfort or sound deadening or anything like that? Compared to older cars? Does it feel dampened in here in terms of sound? Does it sound less like a cave or...
Oh, yeah, I think so, but you have
even
to...
temperature?
Yes. The thing is, this is just brighter
uh-huh.
and has better, I think, feels like it has better sight lines.
Actually, I'm glad you said that.
I know it has the cameras, which the one that we were in, the three didn't. But it just
yeah.
feels very open. I when you're driving a car, you feel the same way. You just mm-hmm. want to be able to see things, right? And
right.
I imagine with an operator, it's even more so. But it does feel far more comfortable, and just because it's not as claustrophobic.
Yeah, the Type 4s, although that was a very long front end, right?
This A pillar here, the sight line through this, was actually 5 inches bigger. Part of the new cab, I think I talked to somebody about it, was this new frameless cab side window, which allowed us to actually bend that glass, you know, much like a windshield here, but still put in a sash window for, you know, that need.
So you could open that up if you need to yell at someone to get off the tracks or what have you.
To reduce the size of this A-pillar, which increases the visibility to the driver.
And the A-pillar is between the windshield and the side window.
So so she picked up on it right away.
My day job is a school bus driver, and I drive one of the special ed buses. It's like a van front, basically. Sure. Those have the worst visibility. It's just ridiculous. So anytime you get a chance to be somewhere and see things in a meaningful way, it's very helpful to an operator. Well, this is lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of the fit and finish. And
Even though it's an operator's
kit. No, I think it's
out.
Did
you box it back home?
Oh, yeah.
Control Alt Delete, think.
That's right. Yes, I want to quit this program.
Can you turn the aux off?
Sorry. No, I can read it for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to read from over here.
I don't remember that.
Did you want in?
Well, thank you for the tour, Peter. I appreciate it.
Sorry, train got powered down.
I'm stuck. You're only going to hear. When I was working at like the Chicago Power Center, walking people in the
Oh, this has the new Orange Line map on it too.
Yeah, it's dotted because it's future, but these will be running on that.
I'm looking forward to having that thing open. That'll be great. The door open button here.
Yeah, there you
go. Fabulous.
Okay.
Thanks again, Peter.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, folks. Again, we appreciate you listening to the show. It's good to share this with you, even though, like I said, the audio quality is less than I would have liked it to have been. But we did get a chance to share some very interesting things from the folks who put together those mass transit cars that we love to use. So I will see you guys next week on thesprocketpodcast.com at iTunes. Please write to us. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Open Roads.